Thank you so much for being here today. I'm very excited to talk to you about the first set of findings from Operation Safety. I have no commercial relationships to disclose, but I wanted to give a quick overview of what we'll be talking about today. First, I'm going to provide some background of mental health in the military and introduce the impact of social networks and social influence. Next, I'm going to discuss our project, Operation Safety, and go through the results and conclusions and discuss the impact and possible resilience factors that might play a role in the mental health outcomes of our soldiers, and then mention where we might go from there. So let's jump right in. Mental health issues are not new problems for our men and women who served during wartime. We know readjustment problems such as PTSD can be long-term. A recent study from Marmar and colleagues out this year in JAMA Psychiatry, which used data from the National Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Study, found approximately 271,000 Vietnam vets currently have PTSD, and a third of them also have major depressive disorder 40 years later. OIF and OEF veterans have PTSD rates that range between 12 and 18%, and these rates are increasing 1 year post-deployment. The Reserve and Guard make up a large proportion of our U.S. military at 42.5%. Post-deployment, the Reserve and Guard are more susceptible to mental health issues than active-duty military personnel, and this includes experiencing higher rates of new-onset PTSD. Additionally, the Reserve and Guard experience more drinking problems, more interpersonal conflict, and experience a greater need for mental health treatment after a deployment relative to active-duty soldiers. So I want to talk about social networks. Is it a risk or is it a protective factor? There's a lot of research done in the adolescent and young adult research field looking at peer influence. Initiation, escalation, and maintenance of substance use and other health behaviors is strongly influenced by the social environment. However, research among adults, and particularly military samples, has not examined the risk of protection incurred from other social or environmental influences. So when I talk about social influences, I'm talking about social networks and social support. So given the high level of environmental stress and trauma associated with military deployments, these shared experiences, these actual deployments themselves, are likely to strengthen the influence of a peer. For environmental influences, I'm thinking about institutional support, commander approval. For training, the amount and type of deployment preparation. And then stress, the actual stress itself of being deployed. So I move into our present work. So to better understand the increased risk experienced by reserve soldiers, this work examined the relationship between the potential pre-deployment resilience factors and post-deployment mental health. The data is coming from Operation Safety, and safety stands for Soldiers and Families Excelling Through the Years. This is an ongoing multi-wave study funded through the National Institutes of Health, examining the health and wellness of U.S. Army Reserve and National Guard soldiers and their partners. I'm really excited to be part of this study because it's focusing on a branch of the military that receives little exclusive focus, and it's including the soldiers' partners. This work will conclude with 400 couples. Currently, we have about 340 completed dyads to date. We'll be wrapping up our recruitment by the end of this year. In order to obtain our sample, we attended weekend drills. In order to do so, we needed to be vetted through the Army Human Resource Protections Office, the Office of the Chief of Army Reserves, as well as the Adjutant General's Office. Once we had all of those approvals and paperwork in hand, I began contacting the individual battalion and unit commanders and asking for permission to attend each weekend drill. Our study design consists of three computerized questionnaires to be completed over 2 years. The first survey lasted approximately 2 hours, and participants were paid $60. A year later, and then 2 years later, they completed a follow-up survey. We expect those follow-up surveys to last about 1 hour to 90 minutes, and they'll be paid $70 for their time. Each individual and the couple completed their surveys separately, and each will provide their own unique login information. As I mentioned, this is a health and wellness study, so we asked a wide variety of general health topics. Nutrition, physical and mental health, caffeine intake, sleep, substance use, the romantic relationship. And for soldiers, we asked whether or not they've been deployed. If they were deployed, then we asked information about that specific deployment. Because of the potential risk of damage to the soldier's career, if information were to be released, we obtained, we applied for and obtained a certificate of confidentiality from the Department of Health and Human Services. Basically, what this means is even with a court subpoena, our records cannot be taken from us. Participants' eligibility consists of the couple reporting they were married or cohabitating, seeing themselves as if married. Both needed to speak and comprehend English. One member must currently be a U.S. Army Reserve or National Guard soldier, and that soldier must be between the ages of 18 and 45. Their partner had to be at least 18 years of age in order to give adult consent. Both members needed to have at least one drink of alcohol in the past year, and both needed to be willing and able to participate. As I stated, we're still recruiting our final sample, so the participant characteristics I'm going to go over is the characteristics of the sample that this analysis was conducted on. As you would expect, the majority of soldiers are male. However, I'd like to point out that overall, more than a quarter of our soldiers were female at 26%. As you can see, 16% of the sample was classified as dual military dyads, meaning that both members of the couple have served or are currently serving in a military branch. We had a diverse sample in terms of race, with 20% of males and 14% of females being in a minority group. The majority of men and women had at least some college education, and men and women were on average in their 30s. 62% of couples classified themselves as married. And then in terms of years served, male soldiers served approximately on average 10 years, with female soldiers serving on average 7. In terms of deployments, male soldiers deployed a little over 1.5 times, and females approximately 1.5 times. So moving on to our 4 mental health outcomes. The first one's anger, and we used the PROMISE, the Patient Reported Outcomes Measurement Information Systems. Now, this is not a scale of actual physical aggression. Instead, it assesses angry mood, negative social cognitions, and efforts to control anger over the last 7 days. It's items such as, I was irritated more than people do. I felt angry. I felt annoyed. For depression, we use the Patient Health Questionnaire 8. And this is used for screening and measuring the severity of depression over the last 2 weeks. For anxiety, we use the emerging measures from DSM-5. Here, higher scores indicate greater severity of generalized anxiety disorder. For PTSD, we use the new PCL-5. This maps right onto DSM-5. This is an updated version. Earlier versions of the PCL had both a soldier and civilian version and asked 17 items. The PCL-5 increases the items to 20. There's only one version now for everybody, and the questions cover the past month. For our correlates, we use items from the Deployment Risk and Resilience Inventory 2. This was a grant funded from the Department of Veterans Affairs to create measures assessing pre-deployment, deployment, and post-deployment risk and resilience factors. It's comprised of 17 measures, and you can actually use the whole 17 as one, or you can use individual items. For the work I'm presenting today, we used 4 of those individual scales. The first is deployment preparation, and this was the extent to which the soldier perceived he or she was prepared for deployment, whether or not they had the necessary training and supplies, whether they were trained enough to use those supplies, if they knew what to expect in terms of their role during that deployment, what it would be like in the region, and how to operate within their unit. For unit support, this was the extent to which an individual perceived assistance and encouragement in the actual war zone from fellow unit members. They felt a sense of closeness, camaraderie with their peers in their unit, as well as with unit leaders. They felt appreciated by their superiors. They believed that their superiors had their best interest in their own personal welfare in mind. For the third DRI measure we looked at was family support. And this was the level of perceived emotional sustenance. And by that I'm referring to the extent to which the individual had understanding and companionship, a sense of belonging and positive self-regard, as well as instrumental assistance from friends and family back home during that deployment. So instrumental assistance was the extent to which they received tangible aid. So things like taking care of their house, their pets, their finances, things like that. We also looked at marital satisfaction and used the well-known marital adjustment test from Locke and Wallace. For our covariates, we looked at years of military service, and this was a cumulative total of years in any service branch across the lifetime. And then the fourth DRIT measure was combat exposure, which was a covariate. This was actual exact circumstances. It was not subjective. So it asked items such as, did you fire your weapon? Were you fired upon? Did you encounter an explosive device? Did you go on special missions? For our methods, we use linear regression models to examine the impact of perceived deployment preparation, unit support, family support, and marital satisfaction on mental health outcomes while controlling for years of service and combat exposure. As I mentioned, our sample is not complete. The time this analysis was done, we had only 26 female soldiers, so I'm going to discuss only male models. The first model we looked at was with anger. You can see unit support and marital satisfaction were both significantly associated with anger. Greater unit support, greater marital satisfaction were related to less anger while controlling for combat exposure and military service years. For depression, unit support and marital satisfaction were found to be resilience factors in that greater unit support, greater marital satisfaction were related to less depression, still while controlling for combat exposure and military service years. Deployment preparation and family support were not significant in the depression model. With anxiety, unit support, marital satisfaction were both significantly associated with anxiety. Again, greater unit support, greater marital satisfaction were related to less anxiety while controlling for combat exposure and military service years. In our fourth and final model, PTSD, marital satisfaction was found to be significant in protecting against PTSD. With PTSD, we find associations between perceived deployment preparation and unit support at trend levels, such as greater deployment preparation, greater unit support related to lower PTSD outcomes at a trend level, still while controlling for combat exposure and military service years. I'm wondering when we have our final sample rerunning this, if we'll actually see the deployment prep come out of trend and into significance. So moving on to our conclusions, we found several social environmental factors to promote resiliency. In all models, unit support and marital satisfaction had significant protective effects on the mental health outcomes of our soldiers while controlling for combat exposure and time in the military. Additionally, there was some evidence of deployment preparation being protective against PTSD outcomes. Deployment preparation and unit support, or the perceptions thereof, may help to mitigate the serious mental health outcomes facing our reserve soldiers. Resiliency training should include plans to increase perceptions around preparation and enhance training around the effects of the buddy support system. Quickly, limitations. The data are cross-sectional. Our sample is not yet complete, and we did not include females. The future direction should replicate the results when the sample is complete, examine the longitudinal associations between the potential resilience factors and mental health outcomes over time. I want to quickly thank NIDA for funding this work. I want to thank all the U.S. Army Reserve and National Guard families for giving us their opinions and experiences. I want to thank the U.S. Army Human Protections Office, the Adjutant General, all the battalion and unit commanders for allowing us to come into their very busy drill weekends. I want to thank all the hardworking research staff at Operation Safety. While I take questions, I just want to leave you with some images. Unit support, marital satisfaction. Let's think about how these things play an effect on the mental health of our soldiers. Thank you.